Hi, Jake, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Randy. Happy to be here.
What musicians influenced your style of playing?
I think the musicians that influenced me the most on the guitar would be Pat Martino, George Benson, Wes Montgomery, and then, of course, Jim Hall, and Grant Green, those players. On non-guitar instrument, I would have to say Dexter Gordon, Cannonball Adderley, Bill Evans, Miles, and I think it would be the thing that got me about them was their real commitment to being an individual and their real distinctive voice on their instrument.
What was it about their playing that you enjoyed so much?
Well, I think what really affected me the most about those players and what I enjoyed the most about them was their, like I said, their real individuality and voice on their instrument. There's no question that it's them, both with their tone and their, you know, their rhythmic interpretations and also their vocabulary. And particularly Pat Martino, I really was inspired and taken with his fiery attack, his approach to phrasing and rhythmic propulsion, I guess. Wes Montgomery, he's a monster voice on the instrument. His octave playing and his bluesiness, and I think all of those guys have a funkiness and a bluesiness to them that I really enjoy, and I think maybe that comes across as an honesty in their music, and that's what I think affected me and inspired me about all of them.
Do you ever go back and listen to older recordings, maybe to pick up a new idea or a style that you might be able to incorporate in something that you're doing now?
Oh yeah, I'm constantly listening and picking stuff up and going back through old recordings that I have and picking something up. I mean, that's part of, I think, what being a jazz musician is all about, and evolving and growing, and I have a very deep respect of the tradition of jazz guitar that came before me, and all of those records are a resource, a treasure chest of ideas and inspiration. So yeah, I do that often.
Do you look for situations, Jake, that are musically challenging? I know as a jazz musician, this can certainly be a lifelong quest.
Yes, I'm always looking for musically challenging situations. In terms of the musicians that I'm working with, I always try to work with the top players and create musical environments with those musicians as a band or having a repertoire or a particular project that will get me into certain challenging situations musically as well as compositionally, improvising and composing for a particular project. I think it is a lifelong quest as a jazz musician to be constantly growing, and as a Canadian jazz musician, I think we have to try and manufacture a lot of our opportunities for to creatively grow, that's why I became a band leader.
Are there any musicians who are no longer with us who you would like to have played with?
That's a great question. I think Dexter Gordon would be somebody that I would have loved to have played with, because I get the impression from listening to some of his live recordings that he's just such a titan on the tenor saxophone and such a pioneer of the jazz language that he would have been very inspiring to play with, and I think it would, you know, he would just raise the level of everyone who played with him. Of course, we all wish that we had the opportunity to play with Miles. From a musical standpoint, I don't know if socially it would anyone would want to deal with that. I'm not sure, but definitely Dexter Gordon, Bill Evans, his sense of time and also sense of composition within his improvisations has always been a big inspiration of mine. and that type of playing, that really close listening, interactive kind of playing, really appeals to me as well. So I wish I had the opportunity to play with him. Cannonball Adderley, who again I think is, you know, one of the funkiest musicians ever, and I think that was certainly one of my favorite all-time jazz groups was his quintet, so I would have loved to have played with him. Lenny Bro, I would have loved to just sat down and play the guitar with him.
If you had to make a recording with any musician that you could pick, who would it be?
That's a really hard question, because there's so many aspects of people's playing and different stylistic things that I enjoy and want to experience and experiment with, that to name one would of course be at the exclusion of all the others. Today I feel like I might have to answer Cannonball Adderley, and again it's because of that down-home honesty and bluesiness in his playing. Tomorrow it might be somebody else who I mentioned earlier, but today I'm gonna go with Cannonball Adderley.
If you had to form a dream band, Jake, who would that band consist of, and what compositions would you perform with them?
Well, you know, I'm very lucky, because in a lot of ways my dream band is Doug Riley and Terry Clark, who I do actually get to perform with on a regular basis, and we'll be having a new recording coming out in the fall, so that's going to take care of that. What pieces would I choose? Well, we're still working on that, but I think it would be along the lines of some of the stuff I did on my first CD with Doug, Doug's Garage, some Horace Silver, some Herbie Hancock, and some of that kind of funky Blue Note stuff. So I do get to record with those guys, so it's great. Aside from them, I would say I might like to, you know, do that material with Jimmy Smith, Grady Tate, and just kind of fill in for Kenny Burrell at some point. Jimmy's still with us, and I think Grady is too, so we'll see.
What brand of instrument do you play?
Well, my main guitar is an old Gibson ES-175, 1951, and it's a beautiful instrument, and I've flirted with a lot of other instruments. I have a 50s L7, Gibson L7, and ES-330 from the 60s, and I always come back to the old 175. I think, for me, it just speaks in the way that I hear the guitar, and I was talking with someone the other day. I mentioned that the more instruments and gear that I try, the more I come back to the one that I've had for about almost 15 years now. So and it just resonates against my body in the way that I want it to, and it speaks exactly the way that I hear the guitar.
Did music come naturally to you when you were growing up?
Yeah, music did come very naturally when I was growing up. My parents were musicians, and so it was always around, and I always played. I only discovered that it actually came easy to me when I got involved with other young musicians who struggled with other things. It didn't come as easy as it does to some people. I mean, I wasn't a child prodigy or anything like that, but I think what I was gifted with was a real sense of commitment to it, and stubbornness and obsession with playing the guitar and playing jazz.
What was it that made you decide that you wanted to play the guitar?
Well, there was always guitars around the house. My dad played the guitar, and there was guitars everywhere. I guess I just I chose the guitar because of by default that there was always one around, and he was always playing it and showed me a few chords when I was a kid. Further to that, my cousin, older cousin, played the guitar, and we spent a lot of time as kids together, so we would figure stuff out together. And then, there were some seminal recordings that I heard. I remember first hearing Wes Montgomery, the incredible jazz guitar of Wes Montgomery, and some Joe Pass record that I can't recall the name of that really kind of put the nail in the coffin to be a jazz guitarist.
When you were growing up, what music did you listen to?
Well, I actually grew up listening to a lot of jazz. My grandfather had a huge swing big band record collection that he would listen to incessantly. So since I was born, I've been listening to jazz music as well. A lot of country music. My dad was a country musician. My uncle's a professional jazz bass player, and he did a lot of pop sessions as well, studio work. So I kind of listened to everything. When I started playing the guitar, I got really into blues. That was probably my starting point, playing blues music, and then jazz. Probably at 14 or 15, I was started really getting into playing jazz. Of course, I play pop, and rock music as well, and some country music, along the way.
Now, were both of your parents musical? Did they come from a musical background?
Well, like I said, my dad is a musician, and uncle. And there are a lot of musicians in the family. My mom was not a musician per se, but certainly a music lover, so that kind of helped. There was always music in the house, that's for sure. And I think that was probably a big part of my musical education. There was always bands rehearsing in the basement and musicians hanging around.
Now, if you were stranded on a desert island, what 10 recordings would you take with you?
Yeah, the desert island list. Well, Kind of Blue, of course. I know it's on everyone's list, but that's a recording that I never get tired of listening to. And I think when I was coming up as a jazz musician, I must have listened to that, 6 or 7 times a day. Also, Jim Hall and Bill Evans, both of those recordings that they did. Wes Montgomery and Jimmy Smith. That recording is a big part of my regular listening. I think the two of them define that genre so well. Wes Montgomery, sounds like a big band when he plays on that. So it's really super swinging, bluesy stuff, and I love their vocabulary and it sounded like a magic meeting. Probably Coltrane Ballads. I'm a big fan of that record. The way they play a ballad, I find it to be the definitive way, so again, I never get tired of that. I would say all the recordings that would make the list are recordings that, after repeated listening, I still am excited as to what's going to happen next. I've heard it 1,000 times, but it always sounds fresh.
I'm curious to ask you, how did your association with Jim Hall and Pat Martino come about?
Well, I was very fortunate to get some funding from the Canada Council to help me with my project, which was to study jazz guitar with, in my opinion, two of the titans of the instrument. And also, interestingly enough, two slightly different generations, Jim Hall being the elder statesman of the guitar, and he was certainly around when the idiom of jazz guitar was invented, and Pat Martino came from, maybe 10 or 15 years later from Philadelphia with the growing up in the organ bands and stuff like that. So they come from two completely different backgrounds, but have changed the way that we, I think, interpret the jazz guitar in a jazz group in a lot of ways. So I just contacted them and said, I'm interested in coming down. Of course, I'd worked with Terry Clark quite a bit at that time, so he was able to kind of put in a good word for me with Jim. And I sent a recording that I did to Pat Martino, and he enjoyed it, and I thought that we could get together and talk about music and talk about guitar and kind of establish that kind of relationship.
What's the main thing that you learned from each of these musicians?
Well, the main thing I learned from both of those musicians was the importance of having a voice and having your own sound and the thing that you do. I mean, both of those musicians have a very definitive way of playing, and that also permeates the type of bands that they play, the type of recordings that they make, and the type of tunes that they write for themselves. most of their compositions being vehicles of improvisation. I think they write tunes that showcase and highlight a particular facet of their playing. Most importantly, Jim Hall's really not trying to sound like anybody but Jim Hall, as is Pat Martino. So from a young musician standpoint, that's a really important thing to learn, to try to feel comfortable being your own man, so to speak, on your instrument, and not trying to be something that you're not. So that would be the biggest thing that I learned from them.
Now, Ed Bickert is a legend in Canadian music, not only as a guitarist, but as a musician. Can you discuss the impact that he had on your musical development?
Well, I think Ed Bickert is cast a very large and influential shadow across the country of jazz guitar players, that's for sure. And I think he, in a lot of ways, does what Jim Hall had done, and redefines the sound of the instrument. I don't think anybody even comes close to sounding like Ed, except Ed. And certainly from a harmonic standpoint, his comping and chord voicings are pretty uniquely his. He has had a huge impact on my musical development. I would go and see him play all the time when I could. And as I had said in the last question about Jim Hall and Pat Martino, again, he's someone that is really only interested in playing like Ed Bickert, and that sounds obvious. But we young musicians are coming up through in a generation where we go to music school and we're told to sound like other people all the time. So it's not quite as easy as that to get out from under the shadows of those titans.
Now, I've asked this of many musicians, and the answers are always quite interesting. Do you prefer studio work or performing live?
Well, I really enjoy the process of being in the studio. I like that type of focused attention to detail, and I like the controllable acoustic environment, and I think some great stuff is done in the studio. That said, I think jazz music is ultimately recorded best or performed best live with an audience. I think it is a communal effort between the musicians on the stage and the audience. When you remove the audience, you're taking a big part of jazz away. It's a spontaneous art form. That said, a lot of times performing live in clubs, nightclubs, and concert halls, you're dealing with less than ideal acoustic environments and potentially social environments too. So it's really hard to get audiences out and to fill rooms and with jazz in Canada these days. So often you're playing for audiences that are maybe unappreciative or noisy or all of that stuff can happen from time to time. Generally, it's great, but every now and then it becomes a little problematic.
Now, Doug Riley has been a part of the Canadian music scene for many years. Now, you must have been thrilled to have recorded with him.
Well, it's constantly a thrill to work with Doug, and he's an incredible musician and an incredible human being too. So he's very warm and supportive and a lot of fun to work with. Sometimes it's ridiculous how good he is. So I feel very fortunate to be able to work with him on a regular basis. I think that he and I have a musical connection that transcends a lot of talking about the music and stuff like that. We just kind of inherently play well together, so it's really been a great relationship, and will continue to be.
Talk a bit about your band, Tone Poets. What were you trying to achieve musically with this band?
Well, the Tone Poets was 6 or 7 years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. What I was trying to do with the band was kind of pop jazz, in a way that Norah Jones is really kind of taking off and you know, taking a lot further to the pop world that we were. But you know, ultimately it was a great experience to lead a band and to work constantly with a band. And so, you know, I got a lot of business chops together with that and recording and producing experience. So but musically it was just you know, a jazz crossover pop group, and we did some pop material with you know, acoustic instruments and stuff like that, and in a way that's certainly becoming in fashion again today.
Now, what is the Canadian Forces Show Band? How did you get involved in this band? Was it fun touring with them?
Well, the Canadian Forces Show Band is basically a show band. We just back up a variety show of a number of singers in different styles, up-and-coming singers in the Canadian music scene. There's like usually a comedian and stuff like that. Musically, it's not really different than, you know, a lot of corporate or, you know, that type of casual engagement. But it's been a great experience to see the world, that's for sure, and get paid to do it. I got involved in the band because of my contacts of growing up in Ottawa, and the band leader producer is from there, so when they needed a guitar player, they knew that I had played all styles and would probably fit in with the group well. So it was great, as I said, touring the world and seeing places that you'd never get the opportunity to see, you know, and just all from playing the guitar. So it was very, very eye-opening from a cultural perspective, and the musicians and the talent was always top-rate, so it was great.
Having performed worldwide at such a young age must have made a lasting impression on you. Now, what skills and musical lessons and ideas did you pick up as a result of all this touring?
Well, I think the number one thing that it taught me, or that I learned from it, was that the power of the universal language of music. I mean, I've had the opportunity to travel all around the world and meet some very interesting, incredible people doing incredible things, all from playing music. And you know, I'll never forget the time I was talking with a fighter jet pilot who I think has a very exciting and interesting job, and he thought the same about me, that I had a very exciting and interesting job just playing the guitar. So we're able to connect socially with people who are in entirely different walks of life, and the common thing is music. So I think what I was able to learn at a very young age and doing a lot of touring with different people was that music is really about people, and it's about playing with people, other musicians, for example, and the relationships that you establish with those people just by playing music socially and musically. And then, of course, the relationship that you establish with the audience. And it really brought the world a little bit more into perspective for me, and it made me feel that, in fact, that I, you know, I actually have a responsibility or a duty or a, you know, and a very important job in the world is to play music for people.
Now, when you're composing your music, what musicians do you draw on from a compositional and arranging point of view?
Well, often my inspiration for composing comes from the from different sources depending on the project that I'm composing for. For my group, my nonfiction band, I listen to a lot of Herbie Hancock's, you know, Headhunters and that type of stuff, Wayne Shorter, Weather Report, and his Native Dancer project, people like that. I'm really interested in the juxtaposition of jazz music with some hip-hop kind of grooves and R&B grooves and contemporary rhythmic things like that. I'm a big fan of Latin music, some Brazilian music composers, Gilberto, people like that, who else, Milton Nascimento, Egberto Gismonti, people like that. Yeah, so a lot of different influences depending on the style.
Carol Welsman is one of Canada's finest vocalists. Now, what was it like performing with her?
Yeah, working with Carol is fantastic. She's an incredibly talented musician and vocalist. So it's great. I hope to be doing some more work with her, and I really enjoy her new projects. Kind of more of a Los Angeles style jazz pop crossover stuff, and I'm always been a big fan of that kind of material. She's a great piano player, great writer and arranger, as well as a great performer and showman, and I think that always makes for an exciting show, and she certainly connects with her audience, and it's always a great experience.
Now, I want you to tell me what the first thing that comes to mind when I mention the following artists. Okay, let's get started. Oliver Gannon.
Well, I'm not that familiar with Oliver's playing. I've heard a few recordings that he did with Fraser McPherson. I enjoyed them. I found them very swinging, and I liked his tone and his vocabulary, kind of the Ed Bickert school of playing and really melodic stuff. It was great.
Richard Ring.
Richard Ring, of course. I lived in Montreal for a number of years, so I would see him play on a regular basis. Again, very in the pocket, swinging. Definitive jazz guitar, stuff like that. It was great.
Now, how about Miles Davis?
Miles Davis, the first thing that comes to mind with Miles is his innovation and his foresight to change music on a constant level. And that's really a thing that comes to mind with him.
And of course, we can't forget Chick Corea.
Chick Corea, the first thing that comes to mind with him is the Fender Rhodes and his use of electronic keyboards at a very early time, which I think was able to really change the sound of jazz throughout the late 60s and 70s. And also, I think he really defined fusion music, as it were, with elements of electronic instruments, as well as some different rhythmic influence, Spanish, Latin music, rock type of grooves and stuff. So it was really, really important in that way.
Now, here's another guitarist that I'm sure has been a big influence on your playing, Tal Farlow.
Tal Farlow, the first thing that comes to mind is his extremely wide stretching chord voicings and stuff like that. I've listened to a few of his recordings and always really enjoyed the type of chord voicings and voice leading and type of things like that he did.
And of course, speaking about guitarists, another Canadian jazz legend, Lenny Breaux.
Lenny Breaux is in many ways the Charlie Parker of the guitar, the Jaco Pastorius of the guitar, that type of thing. I think he did things on the guitar that have never been done and will never be done in quite that fashion. He's certainly an inspiration to any musician on any instrument, but without question one of the biggest forces on the guitar. So when it comes to thinking about Lenny, I often think about his harmonic sense, literally the harmonics that he does on the guitar, as well as his, his beautiful accompaniment and solo guitar playing that sounds like Bill Evans on the guitar. And you could swear that there's two guys there, but it's all Lenny. So, also his contribution as a Canadian jazz musician, I think, was really important, and his legend and legacy last today with being handed down to my generation. All the great stories about Lenny and stuff have really been an inspiration, and I feel very honored to be a part of the lineage and heritage of Canadian jazz guitar players, and there's so many great ones, so we'll just do what we can to keep the flame burning.
Well, I want to thank you for dropping by today and spending some time with us, and we certainly have enjoyed it quite a bit.
Well, thank you. It was really a lot of fun answering these questions and talking about the guitar and talking about music. So until next time, thank you very much.